Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a Democrat independent, voted for Obama both times, maintained the equilibrium, and I just, you know, and then this last one, I voted for neither. When the Mueller investigation turned up what it didn't turn up, and in my party has been going on, has been riding this guy's back for years, I mean more than 2 years. And I was part of that. I really honestly thought that there was some real problems there. Now it comes out by our own people that that there was no truth to it. And now my ex-party is backpedaling like crazy. Honestly believe that Mr. Trump is going to reveal a lot to the nation. I'm very anxious to see our country be uprighted. To get back into it. Instead of everything doom and gloom all the time, getting things back up again. I will vote Trump 2020. If this thing goes like it looks like it's going to go, they got me 100% behind them. Bush's failures, this is my belief, my opinion, I think Bush's failures put Obama in office, and I think Obama's failures and Hillary's failures put Trump in office. What he did for his constituents in promising the things that he promised he was going to do, he done them. I mean, I'm not a Trumper, okay, but I'm telling you, he's done the Supreme Court. He just has done what he said he was going to do, and you can't ask for no more than that.
Yeah. James Bostic here. That ACP, welcome. Great to have you here with us. We do it live Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we also have a recorded version of the program that goes out Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Mojo 50 Radio. Mojo MOJO50.com. The very best, the world's best. I'm going to go ahead and say it. Conservative libertarian talk radio on the internet. That's it. Can't do any better. MOJO50.com. The fellow that you just heard was a man by the name of Scott Barnhart. He's from Wisconsin. He was at a Trump rally. You heard what he said. He's not an unreasonable man. So wasn't a belligerent man. He wasn't a brainwashed fella by any stretch of the imagination. Now, in the teaser, I talked about, you know, a voice from the silent majority speaks. And you guys have heard me use that term before. And it's a political phrase, and it goes back in time a ways. We could take it back to Warren Harding and even before that, but we're not going to for our purposes, for the context that we're going to be looking at it through. Goes back to the Nixon administration. Now, in that time, and what we're talking about is a demographic. Okay, that's what it is. It's a demographic, and in that time, and I'm gonna describe this demographic to you, and there are certain things that maybe we can compare and contrast with the silent majority in his current incarnation. But in Nixon's time, what he was talking about was the greatest generation. In the 1970s, the war was about 30 years behind these fellows. So the World War II veterans all over the country. But it also included a lot of young people within this particular demographic. It wasn't necessarily based on age. Young folks from the Midwest and the West and the South, many of who wound up eventually serving in Vietnam. The silent majority, mostly populated by blue-collar folks who didn't necessarily take an active part in politics. So they were the suburban, the ex-urban, and the rural middle-class voters. Now, the silent majority in some cases did support some conservative policies. As a rule, though, they weren't necessarily politically conservative. The problem was this. They resented what they saw as disrespect for American institutions. Law enforcement, the military, our laws, the rule of law, our borders. And Nixon made a speech. And what this speech did is it introduced what was known as the Nixon Doctrine, but we're not going to get into that yet. In this speech, Nixon contrasted his foreign policy strategies of what he termed political realism against the idealism of a vocal minority. And he stated that following this radical minority's demands to withdraw all the troops immediately from Vietnam would bring defeat, and it would also be disastrous for world peace, because at the time, the Vietnam War was a war against communist aggression, just as the Korean War was. It was one of the hotter phases of the Cold War in our overall strategy to defeat communism. So, in appealing to this silent majority, Nixon asked them for united support to end the war in a way that we could win the peace. And that brings us to what we call the Nixon Doctrine. And according to the Nixon Doctrine, and wisely, the defense of freedom is everyone's business, not just America's business. Just as it is the mandate of each individual nation state to be responsible for their own national security. Now, he gives this speech. He appeals to this silent majority, this vast silent majority. Now, his approval rating, which was already at about 50%, which is still pretty respectable, shot up to 81% all across the nation, 86% in the South. Now, journalists will tell you this and that. They'll tell you that it was part of a Southern strategy to divide people, divide and conquer and all this. What this was Nixon's attempt to focus the American public's attention on the importance of having a global defensive strategy, foreign policy. And our foreign policy at this time dealt with the containment and the prevention of the spread of communism. But there were left-wing and progressive and communist forces here within the country that saw this as a very divided issue, and they worked to make it even more divisive. This was Nixon's attempt, and successfully so, to dismiss these people. The vast silent majority looked at these folks, saw them for what they were, and that was that. What you just heard was Mr. Barnhard there, Scott Barnhard. It's part of that silent majority. Yes, he was a Democrat, and he voted for Obama twice. But then at some point, just like Ronald Reagan, who was also a Democrat, Scott Barnhart says, you know, I'm not leaving the Democrat Party so much as, or joining the Republican Party, as much as the Democrat Party is leaving me. And they're turning hard to the left. This guy doesn't like that. And he's intellectually honest enough, because we can drag Donald Trump's accomplishment record out here. It's impressive. And that's understating it. But the guy has done, just like Scott Barnhart said, the guy has done what he said he was gonna do. I promise you, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, there are a lot more Scott Barnhards out there. A lot. And you're going to see more and more Scott Barnhards. Here's why. Oh, they have a new... the clown car is still rolling. They have a new lineup for the debate next week, and we'll talk about that a little bit. And also, Bob Mueller coming to town tomorrow. Bob Mueller going to be in Jerry the Jow Nadler's house, talking things over. They were practicing today. Yeah, no, they really were. They were practicing today, scrimmaging, I guess, going over the questions with Bob Mueller. You understand what I'm saying? Not just these guys asking the questions and figuring out which ones are good, which ones are bad. Not some kind of a skull session between members of the Judiciary Committee or even Democrat members of the Judiciary Committee. It's the Democrats and Bob and Bob Nadler, not Bob Nadler, Jerry Nadler, and the Democrats and Robert Mueller talking about how they can say what they need to say tomorrow to make it look bad. So bad. I thought, and I really did think this, and I was a fool to think it. When Gerald Nadler invited John Dean, 115-year-old John Dean, as a contextual witness, to this nothing burger that's been going on for the last 2 years. I thought they were scraping the bottom of the barrel. They really, truly are. I knew at some point, if it became a matter of pride, and that would be the only way that it would happen, you know, a peeing contest between Bob Mueller and Jerry Nadler, Bob Mueller was going to come in and testify because Nadler wasn't, well, Nadler's a dumb man, but he's also a very prideful man. And like a lot of Democrats and other politicians in Washington on both sides, believes his own hype. He's been there for a million years and he thinks he can throw his ample weight around, which I'm sure he does. I mean, he got Bob Mueller to testify, but it's all fixed. See, it's all fixed. These are the fixinest SOBs. I swear to Rudy, these cats, man, they will work and scheme and connive and try to fix anything they can. And that's what's going on. But tomorrow he's going to testify, which means Thursday, you know, I'm going to have some fun. So looking forward to that. But back to this thing here with Scott Barnhart. I think that Scott Barnhart, from the center-left perspective, is probably really illustrative of what we're talking about in terms of this silent majority. It was no different in Nixon's time. There were a number of Democrats who abandoned the Democrat Party over these divisive issues. And they supported the president and his vision for America, just as Donald Trump in 2016. And I think Barnhart was right. Certain failures of the Bush years, and that doesn't necessarily mean policy failures or failures in foreign or national and domestic policy is what I'm trying to say. Foreign or domestic policy, necessarily failures there, but maybe failures to ensure that somebody like Obama and Hillary couldn't happen. Maybe that's one of the ways George Bush failed, but they did. And Obama's failures, spectacular as they are, set up bringing about a guy like Donald Trump. He's not a politician. He really is an outsider, although he knows everybody and he's connected to all these cats. He is not a politician. He's a doer. And he's been doing. And that's what's impressed this guy, and it's good, and it's impressing a lot of people, a lot of white people, a lot of black people, a lot of Hispanic people. They like his ideas. They like what he's doing. And basically, all the Democrat Party has to offer within its candidates, within its vast stable of presidential hopefuls, is basically to take away all the policy successes and go back to whatever we had. They want a bigger, more authoritarian government. They want to expand the soft tyranny as it exists in Washington and bring it out everywhere. They want to roll back his tax cuts. They want to suffocate the economy. They want to suffocate you and I. And we can't allow it to happen. And it's going to rely upon this vast, silent majority. We're all part of it, you know, maybe not necessarily me because I do a lot of talking about this stuff. And yeah, it says it in the name, a conservative's perspective. So I don't really think I'm misleading anyone when I get on here and I start talking about things, and I don't think that people who would listen to a conservative's perspective are being particularly intellectually dishonest, and it's cool, okay? We don't make a huge issue out of the identity politics about it, but and it's okay. We don't have to. But But it's going to be people like Scott Barnhart. It's going to be people like you, like me. What's going to put Donald Trump over the top in 2020? That's it, right there. And these guys on the left, they can't do anything. They've already started out 2 years, well, a year and a half now, before the election, 6 months before the campaign begins in earnest, because, you know, that cycle usually starts about a year. So really getting the wind, you know, by December, people are going to be jacked up and ready to rock and roll. And then as we move into 2020, it's on. But they can't moderate their position. If they came out with moderate, Joe Biden, classic example, even though he's still in the lead in a lot of places, I don't know if he's going to be the nominee or not, but right now, you know, he's leading, so what? They can't come back from their already extremist left-wing positions. You see what I mean? They can't walk it back. They can't reverse their position on transgenders. They can't reverse their position on free college tuition. They can't reverse their position on amnesty for illegal aliens. They won't. They think that they can't. And if they do, they upset and further alienate the extreme radical voter wing of the Democrat Party. And for some reason, you know, they're not going to change. They're just going to stay. They're going to stay where they are, or they're going to go in their desperation even further to the left. And it is at this point that the silent majority is going to remain silent. Amongst all the rhubarb, amongst all the tumult, amongst all the brouhaha, then on election day, boom. I think that's what's going to happen. Because that's how it happened in 2016. Every poll out there, every news head in the establishment media, Hillary's going to win it in a walk. She's going to leg past this big round Cheeto looking man and hail Ming. I mean, hail Hillary. Hail Ming. Ming the merciless. Hillary the heartless. But that's what they thought. They thought they had a lock. They had locked it. They knocked Bernie Sanders out of it. Bernie Sanders. Have you heard about him? And what's going on with the $15 an hour wage? Yeah, he's been screaming bloody murder that we need it all over the country, regardless of the fact that it means, okay, if you get it, business owners are going to do what? Well, they're going to cut back on the employees' hours. So, yes, they're making more money per hour, but they're not going to be making any more money per paycheck. They will probably be making less. So Bernie Sanders' campaign workers go, hey, Bern, my man, what's up? Let's talk about this 15 an hour thing. And Bernie says, well, what do you want to talk about it for? Well, you know, it's time for you to start practicing what you preach, Holmes. So pony up, babe. We know you got plenty of money left over from the last campaign. You got three houses, one of them a lakefront property. Let's see some skin, old man. So you know, he's caught. He's caught. What can he do? What can he do? So he gives them the $15 an hour, but then he cuts everybody's hours back. I threw back my head and I laughed long and loud. But I predict that's what's going to happen. The polls all said, you know, everybody that was polled here and there, they were all Hillary, they were all these things. Well, what these guys had done as a way of whistling past the graveyard is they had oversampled the polls. In other words, they would stack the deck. If they had, you know, a poll of 500 people, well, they would make sure that 300 of them were Democrats or likely to vote Democrat. And so naturally it comes out, you know, they manipulate the numbers, and they massage it, and they cook them, and they get them to say whatever they want to say. Will Rogers, maybe? If you laid statisticians and pollsters end to end, they'd point in all different directions. And that's exactly what happened. But in this case, they all pointed towards Hillary winning, and they were wrong. They were so disastrously wrong. It's going to happen again. And it's going to come from two prongs. They're still going to run the polls. They're still going to manipulate those. And they're going to manipulate the hell out of them from here on out. Expect that no matter what you read. Don't believe it. But in the candidates as well, because pretty soon the cannibalism is going to start. They're going to have to start turning on each other. There's 20 of these cats out there, and they're going to have to start turning on each other. They're going to have to start scrambling. They're going to have to start gouging eyes, biting ankles, grabbing folding chairs. You know, it's a cage match. It's going to come down to it. It has to at some point. And even with those who are left, they're going to be the furthest of the left out of all these guys, because that's the name of their game. Who's going to go further left? And at this point, you know, they've already reached this point in their agenda, in this leftward march, where even National Public Radio says that Democrat voters are disgusted with the leadership's agenda. National Public Radio. The People's Democratic Socialist Radio. Okay, what's that tell you? Now, you don't see Rachel Maddow or Chris Matthews or any of the establishment media talking about this, but there it is. Don't take my word for it. Go check it out. There's a public broadcasters poll or National Public Radio, something like that. Yeah. There are a lot of the silent majority on the Democrat side, too. A lot. You see them in the walk away movement. You see them right there with Scott Barnhart. These people are changing their minds, and some of them have been lifelong Democrats. Some of them, maybe they don't care one way or another. You know, it's just, and there are people like that. They don't take an active part in it. Most, you know, a lot of people don't make up their minds one way or another until about a month before. It's just the truth. A lot of people. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But my prediction is that the great majority, that great silent majority, they're going to step up. And they're going to step into the voting booth, and when they do, Katie, bar the door. It's going to be awesome. Well, let's see. We're down to the bottom of the hour, and I think we need to find something. Let me see here. We are, this is Blog Talk Radio. If it's Tuesday, it's Blog Talk, and we do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays. Seven p.m. Eastern Time, and I am having a little problem finding what I was looking for, and it's ticking me off a little bit. So anyway, we'll have to come up with something else. I should be a little bit better organized when it comes to this. But you know what? I always plan. I'm going to hit something there in the last few minutes, the bottom of the hour, but I'm always wound up doing something else. And now, believe it or not, I just backspaced myself completely out of the studio. It's always stuff like this, man. We do a lot. We do it live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern time here on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com. Then we have a recorded version, which goes out on Mojo 50 Radio, and you can go to mojo50.com. And Sundays 4 p.m. there. Now let's see what's going on. We're back. We're going to be going long tonight anyway, so I'm not going to get too excited about it. I used to worry about stuff like this happening, but we will be back with more ACP right after this.
Make those galaxies shine. Put on your traces in vato. Make those galaxies shine. The holding court on the corner. Marijuana boogie time.
Yeah. Coming back now. Here's what we're going to do since we're running. I don't even know what's going on here. Somebody help me. Are we on the air? Yeah, we are. Okay. One of those nights, not going to sweat it. And that's a shame, because I thought that was the right copy of Minnie the Moocher, but apparently it wasn't, because it was way short. We're back. James Bosque here, Conservative's Perspective on Patriot Nation Radio Network. We do it here at blogtalkradio.com. We do this live twice a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tomorrow, former special counsel Robert Mueller is going to be testifying in front of Gerald Nadler's House Judiciary Committee. Really don't know exactly what to say about that. Oh, by the way, yeah, it's a National Public Radio poll. Indicates that Democrat voters detest, and that is the word they're using, detest what these guys are up to. Now, back to Bob Mueller. He's going to be testifying, and a lot of things have come to light here lately. And one of the things that's come to light has to do with James Comey. I think it was Tom Fitton, maybe, from Judicial Watch, that you know, unearthed this stuff. But a guy by the name of Paul Sperry wrote an article about it. And what he did was, there, according to always anonymous sources that are related to and moving within and out the bubble of the Inspector General investigation, FBI Director James Comey planted an FBI operative into the White House. Exactly. Not dead air, I was just getting a drink. And why would he do that? I don't know. But according to Real Clear Investigations, at the same time that James Comey himself was personally scrutinizing the president during meetings in the White House and on phone conversations from the FBI, he had an agent inside the White House working on the Russian investigation, and this guy would report back to FBI headquarters about Trump and his aides, according to physicians, officials familiar with this matter. Now, mind you, this was at the same time that James Comey was also telling the president that he was not a subject of the investigation. The agent's name is Anthony Ferrante. He specialized in cybercrime, and he left the White House around the same time that James Comey was fired and soon joined a security consulting firm where he contracted with BuzzFeed to lead the news site's efforts to verify the Steele dossier in connection with a defamation lawsuit. Oh, my God. Knowledgeable sources inside the Trump White House say that FBI Director Comey carved out an extraordinary new position for Ferrante, which allowed him to maintain to remain on what they call reserve status at the FBI while he was working in the White House, allegedly as a cybersecurity advisor. You are not under investigation. You are a subject of the investigation, and cure you. Got a guy working in the White House. This guy used to be for security. he's going to work in the White House here. He'll make sure that you guys stay safe and are protected on an internet, on a cybernet perspective. And the dude is reporting back. He's spying on people in the White House, and he's reporting back to the FBI what he's finding out, which apparently was nothing. Were there any bombshell revelations from this Anthony Ferrante? Was that his name? Is that what I said? Yeah. Any bombshell revelations from this guy concerning what was going on in the White House? No. At least not that I've seen. His name has not even come up. If the Department of Justice and the FBI really, truly believed that Donald Trump was a hostile agent of foreign government, their proclaimed justification for their by-the-book endeavors, and if the DOJ and the FBI actually had reasonable evidence to support that investigative position, then everything that we're talking about, everything that FBI Director James Comey is now doing, or is now being accused of doing, rather, it would be okay. It would be justified. Now, let me say that again. If the Department of Justice and the FBI really believed that Donald Trump was a Russian spy, then their proclaimed justification for their by-the-book endeavors concerning this, and if they actually had reasonable evidence to back that up, then all these things that Comey's being accused of now would be justified. Instead of being the goat, he would be the hero. The key words being reasonable and justifiable. As we've noted here before, generating public outrage over the investigative outcome is it's a tactic. It's called the outrage trap. Benghazi is a good example of it. Fast and Furious, another good example. IRS targeting. We found out about everything that was going on, and we're outraged by it, but then what happens? What happened with Fast and Furious? What happened with Benghazi? That was pretty outrageous. What about the IRS targeting Tea Party groups? So when you see these stories, everybody's mad about what happened. In other words, the outcome. Well, what was the outcome, okay, of the IRS targeting? Well, what they were doing, they were slow-walking Tea Party group tax-exempt statuses, and they were hamstringing their political effectiveness by not allowing them to claim 501c3 status. Everybody wanted to talk about what happened in Benghazi. Nobody wanted to ask why the State Department and the CIA were there to start with. Everyone was wanting to talk about the IRS refusing tax-exempt status, but no one wanted to talk about why the Department of Justice wanted the CD-ROMs from the IRS's Schedule Bs. If they focus on the outcome and everybody's mad about that, then nobody talks about the origin. And that's what we've got to get to. Where did this, in this particular case, in the collusion case, who decided they were going to spy on Donald Trump? Somebody had to give the green light on this. It didn't just happen. Some head or group of heads somewhere decided that he was a threat and that they were going to be, they were going to have to pull the trigger on this guy. So they come up with this scheme, and it's all over the place, and it runs between the CIA and the FBI and the Hillary Clinton State Department and operatives therein. Glenn Greenwald and Fusion GPS, Christopher Steele, Bob Mueller, Andrew Weissman. That's a guy. So he has this guy in there. Who started this? Well, you know, if you go back, James Comey didn't think this up on his own. James Clapper, John Brennan, in spite of the pivotal roles they played in this coup, they didn't green light it. They did not say, you know, they didn't take it upon themselves to do this. Who did? Well, who's bigger than the director of the CIA, the director of the FBI, and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence? Who's bigger than those guys? Yeah. There's only one, right? There's only one cat that would be able to say, hey, let's go ahead and make this happen. You guys just do what you got to do. I really don't want to know a whole lot about it for obvious reasons, but here's the plan. I will expect you to carry it out as follows. And, you know, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I don't think it was a very neat plan. It was a pretty sloppy plan. But one thing's for sure, they were absolutely convinced that Hillary Clinton was going to win. So when, you know, Hillary Clinton's not going to be investigating herself or these guys, especially since they were cool enough to do all this stuff and get her to the Oval Office. So it's going to be forgotten about. And in their arrogance and in their conceit and their overconfidence, this is what they believed. I'm still here. Oh, by the way, anybody Ruth Ginsburg much? Ruth Bader Ginsburg much? I think we saw her at John Paul Stevens' funeral, or it was her holographic life decoy that she got from S.H.I.E.L.D., her animatronic double, but she's out and about. She's just standing there, like she'd been photoshopped in the picture, but I know she wasn't. She was there. Clock's ticking. And, you know, if she hadn't showed up here, there would have been some serious questions as to her health. And I think there are legitimate questions as to her health, but here's what's going to happen. They're not going to say anything until she dies. And it's going to be like Mao. It's going to be like when Mao Zedong died. They're not going to say anything for a while until they get stuff ironed out. Then they'll tell people. They're just, nah, he's sick. Nah, he's sleeping. Nah, he's reading. He's working on stuff. Yes. Well, no, he's busy right now. He can't be seen. Okay, when are we going to tell these guys that he's dead? I mean, it's been like a month. So. But here's the thing. When you hear about this story, and you will, it's going to come out. where James Comey had a spy in the White House, because that's kind of sensationalistic, and people, when they put it that way, are going to, what? And they're going to pay attention. Everybody's going to be upset that he did it, but nobody's going to talk about why. What was the motive behind that? Why would he put a man inside there? And at this, if he's telling the president, and he did indeed say to the president, Mr. President, you are not an object of this investigation. This has nothing to do with you. Get in there and see what you can find out. What's the motivation behind that? Why was that done? Oh, wait a minute. Here it is. Pull it up without blowing out the studio. Yeah, here it comes. It's an NPR Marist poll, PBS NewsHour Marist poll. And let me see what they say. His approval ratings have gone through the roof. And I'm trying to scroll down here to see. There's a lot of approving of Donald Trump, which a lot of people are doing. But overwhelmingly, what's happening is that the rank and file Democrat voters, the Scott Barnhards, are rejecting what these guys say. For example, healthcare for illegals. 62% of the people surveyed say it's a bad idea. Okay, and these are Democrat voters. 47% of those are moderate Democrats. 67% of them independent. That's serious. But every single one of the Democrat presidential candidates, when asked by a show of hands, who's down with free health care for illegal aliens, they all raised their hands, every single one of them. 67% are opposed to the Democrat plan to decriminalize illegal border crossings. 68% of independents, 63% of minority voters object and oppose this left-wing push for open borders. Now, how are they going to back off that? How are all those Democrat candidates, every single one of them, how are they going to walk that back? They can't. They can't. They've got to go even further left. They can't, you know, and it's, like I said, it's a year and a half out. And they've already taken these extreme positions. They've painted themselves into this left-wing Marxist progressive corner, and the rest of the, you know, the silent majority is going to walk out of the room and close the door behind them, leaving these guys there. And that's fine, or at least that's my prediction, and that's my hope, that's my prayer. Make sure you check out somewhere. I'm sure Fox will have it. C-SPAN will definitely have it. Bob Mueller testified. I'm not exactly sure when he goes in to perform in this dog and pony show, but you can bet it's going to be good. And I'm hoping, and the conventional thinking is, that he's going to be pressed with some tough questions from the Republicans. And it may be such that even if he doesn't answer them, because he's already been admonished by the Department of Justice to keep his comments contained to the report and the backstory behind it. So there may be things that he can't answer, but that doesn't mean they don't have answers, if you know what I mean. And there may be things that he tries not to answer under those auspices. And if that's the case, then the Department of Justice will release what they think, you know, it was okay to say. So that means Thursday we'll be loaded for bear on that. We're 5 minutes out, and I thought we might go long, but I think we're just going to go ahead and call a halt to it tonight. Thank you once again for the opportunity to visit with you and talk about some of this stuff. We'll be back on Thursday, of course, looking at the Mueller testimony, and I got a feeling we'll be dedicating a lot of time to that and seeing what's going on. Thank you for the opportunity to hang out with you. Sundays, 4 p.m., you can find A Conservative's Perspective on Mojo50Radio.com. They have the iHeartRadio app. They're everywhere. Okay, it's not just iHeartRadio. You can find Mojo50 on all kinds of different apps out there, and I encourage you to do so. Live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern time here. A couple of different places, Cowboy Logic, Restoring America Forum, Facebook presence there. You need to go check them out. Talk America Radio, West Virginia. Talk America Radio, Texas. A Conservative's Perspectives archive page and our regular page as well. Go on in, hit the like button on all those places. You'll be glad you did. We'll be glad to see you. And speaking of seeing you, we will see you this coming Thursday, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. God bless you. God bless America.